Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, June 23rd, 2017. South Sudan's media authority lifts its ban on foreign journalists.
Foreign journalists, they have been coming and they will be continue coming. As media authority, we will continue doing our work, giving them permits and as required by the law.
And the UN Secretary General attends a summit in Kampala on refugees a day after visiting Ugandan refugee camp.
I was able a few years later to accompany many of them across the border, going back home, reuniting with their family and hoping that their new country would be in peace. Unfortunately, the leaders of the country have not served the people they have, and the people is suffering enormously with this endless war.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The media authority in South Sudan has lifted a ban on 20 foreign journalists who were denied permission to enter the country. The media authority lifted the ban following pressure from the National Dialogue Steering Committee. The media authority's managing director says his agency will accredit all journalists who want to work in the country. Tito Justin has more for VOA from Juba.
Earlier this month, the South Sudan Media Authority says it banned certain journalists from entering South Sudan over what it called unrealistic stories and misinformation. But the National Dialogues Committee urged the authority to lift the ban so that foreign journalists can freely report on the national dialogue process. Ewan Smith, head of political affairs and press at the British Embassy in Juba, says if the steering committee wants the dialogue to succeed, the government must allow freedom of expression.
It's very difficult for the international media to report on the workings of the National Dialogue and the Steering Committee when national security are preventing them from coming. And this includes the BBC and the British newspaper, The Guardian. So I'd be very grateful for the panel's view on whether the government has made progress recently in improving the ability of people to speak their minds and for the media to report, and also on whether they are able to make representations to the president and to members of the government to improve the situation.
Last month, Al Jazeera English journalists were banned from working in South Sudan after airing a report from a rebel-held part of Yei River State. Alfred Taban, the National Dialogue Steering Committee's Secretary for Information, confirms the committee asked the media authority to reverse its decision.
They were preventing some journalists because they say some journalists were fond of criticisms of what is happening in the country. They were, in other words, skeptics. I said, whether skeptics or not, they must be allowed to come into the country.
Taban says when he took up the issue with the media authority officials, they assured him the ban would be lifted.
I don't think they will refuse because I talked to the managing director of the media authority and he promised that he will facilitate the entry into the country of foreign journalists.
Elijah Alier Kwe is managing director of the South Sudan Media Authority.
Foreign journalists, they have been coming and they will be continue coming. As media authority, we will continue doing our work, giving them permits and as required by the law.
At least 10 journalists have been killed in South Sudan since South Sudan declared its independence from Sudan in 2011. 9 of the 10 were killed after fighting broke out in Juba in December 2013. Several South Sudanese journalists have fled the country following threats from suspected National Security Service operatives. The Nation Mirror, the Arabic language Al Tabir, and the Citizen newspaper were all shut down by the government in 2015 and remain closed today. In April, the country's media rights body, Association for Media Development in South Sudan, or AMIDIS, petitioned the Kiir administration to reopen all media houses closed by the government's National Security Service and to foster good relationship with local and foreign journalists covering developments in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
Aid agencies have successfully scaled back famine in two parts of South Sudan, but UNICEF is warning that malnutrition and a lack of access to clean water could continue to put tens of thousands of children at risk across the country. UNICEF's chief of communications in Juba, Tim Erwin, tells Ayen Bior 6 million South Sudanese struggle to find enough food each day, which is the highest level of food insecurity ever experienced in the country.
The situation across the country remains as serious as it ever has in terms of food insecurity. When we first announced the famine declaration a few months back, we estimated that there were around 4.5 million people who were struggling to feed themselves. We estimate that that figure has increased to 6 million, and that represents more than half of the population. So the absolute worst-case scenario of famine has been responded to, and that is no longer present. But the next most serious stage is still present in far too many parts of the country.
Now, 6 million people, UNICEF says this is the highest level of food insecurity ever experienced in the country. How do you respond to that? What is the strategy?
I mean, it's a multi-pronged strategy. Obviously, we divide up responsibilities amongst various UN agencies. We use what we call rapid response teams. These are teams that go into very remote areas by helicopter. They pitch tents and they stay on the ground for about a week. The World Food Program normally organizes a food drop. We're there to provide health care, to clean and then treat childhood malnutrition, which is a very serious issue in South Sudan, to provide vaccinations and immunizations, and to try and register any children who may have been separated from their families. So, you know, food assistance is one of the primary ways, of course, that you address the famine. But, you know, the knock-on effects of a famine, such as childhood rates of malnutrition, we estimate that there are more than 1 million malnourished children in South Sudan, many of them very severely malnourished.
And we're also hearing that waterborne illnesses brought on by the rainy season will make it harder for you to do your job.
This is the part of our kind of multi-pronged approach, if you like, to treating childhood malnutrition. Because, you know, if a child is drinking dirty water and becomes sick with diarrhea or other illnesses, then their immune system is further weakened. And if their food intake is not adequate and then they begin suffering from malnutrition, then they're much more likely to become very sick and perhaps, you know, develop other conditions. Everything is connected. A malnourished child who becomes sick is going to struggle much, much more to recover. But also there's an aspect of just access. I mean, many of these communities become inaccessible during the rainy season because of flooding, because of, you know, roads, and most of the roads are just mud roads. They become impassable because they become very, very muddy as a result of the rain. So, which is why during the dry months, we pre-position materials across the country to ensure that we can continue to respond, even when perhaps we can't move supplies by road in the way which we had done previously.
Now, along with Lair and Mayandit, which other areas in South Sudan are most in need?
So what we see is in areas where there is conflict, those are the areas where we see the highest levels of food insecurity. So in the central north, in this area around Unity State, that continues to be an area of concern. In the northeast, an area called Upper Nile, that is also an area where we're seeing very, very high levels of food insecurity. And now in the state to the west of the country called Jonglei, we are focusing a lot of our rapid response attention there, given very significant displacement that's taken place.
That's Tim Erwin, UNICEF's Chief of Communications, speaking to Ayen Bior from Juba. Despite the recent report by the UN's World Food Programme and the Food and Agriculture Organization that food insecurity in South Sudan has increased, farmers in Jonglei State are predicting a bumper harvest this year. The farmers say adequate rainfall and improved security in parts of the state has allowed families to farm their land this year. Deng Gai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
Farmer Akwat Matok weeds his crops. He uses a hand hoe to remove weeds and unwanted plants that competes for his space, water and nutrients with his food crops. Matok has subdivided his nearly 3-acre farm into 4 parts. One part is growing sorghum so tall that Matok almost disappears standing amidst the rows. On another side of the farm, he grows maize. In the third and fourth sections, Matok grows groundnuts and okra. The crops are all green and healthy. There has been plenty of rainfall in Bor this year. To ensure that its crops are not flooded in heavy rain, Matok has dug a water channel around the farm to drain all excess water. Speaking in Dinka, Akwat says he hopes that this year there will be a good crop yield.
The crop look healthy, as you can see. I hope if it continues this way, I will have a good harvest. All of us expect a good harvest because this year the rain started at the right time.
Matok says after the harvest, he hopes to sell some of his food to raise money to pay for his children's school fees, and some will go to forward expanding his farm next year.
I need to increase the size of my farm. This is the first time I am growing these crops here. I wanted to test the soil and see if crops can do well here.
Another farmer, Kate Ball, says in Dinka that she too expects a good harvest this year.
I have planted sorghum, groundnut, okra, and sukumawiki. I believe that after the harvest this year, I will earn some money that will help me and my children.
Ball worries about wild birds such as weaver birds that she says can eat some of her sorghum before it ripens and affects the yield and harvest. She says wild birds might also eat her maize and reduce the harvest. Jonglei State Agriculture Minister Mayan Ngor says he has seen more residents engaging in producing their own food this year than ever before.
The farmers are responding to the call, to the national call and the state call, that people must go for farming this year. And also, relatively, the security situation is quiet.
Ngor says in a bid to end food shortages in the area, the Jonglei State government has launched the Akur Demonstration Farm to produce food and train farmers.
Nearly 500 fadan in Akur has been planted in May. So we are okay now. And if we get the fuel now, we continue farming so that we finish with the long-term sorghum. And that can be harvested in December.
Daniel Matiom Ngang, program manager for Greater Bor United Farmers Group, says despite insecurity, residents should strive to produce their own food to survive, since food prices have soared in the market.
During the start of this rain, we have seen the rain has started very well, and many farmers have tried their level best, so they have cultivated.
But farmer Aman Deng says there are other challenges besides insecurity. Deng is calling on the government to do more to support farmers in her area.
I am asking the government to support us with vegetable seed that are not common here, like cabbage, sukumawiki, and tomato seed.
Deng says she stands ready to cultivate more land and produce more food. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, community leaders in a Ugandan refugee camp worry about the future of girls in the camp. Find out why when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can African countries develop to export more manufacturing goods rather than raw materials?
African countries should open many companies, industries, market, new markets that will specialize in manufacturing. So as they manufacture, they will have to export more.
African countries should put up more industries and encourage people to go into agro-processing.
And also needs people to be trained on how to manufacture the things ready so that they can be transported.
I will have to say that we need to build our own machines. A product like cocoa, for example, if we had the machineries to manufacture chocolates, I'm sure we will not be exporting it outside.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres is appealing to the international community to increase funding for South Sudanese refugees living in Uganda. At a refugee solidarity summit in the Ugandan capital, Kampala, Guterres said South Sudan's leaders must end the fighting so refugees can go home safely. Mungume Davis Rakarinj has more for VOA from Kampala.
More than $350 million was pledged by several countries to fund refugee activities at today's refugee summit in Kampala. Secretary General Guterres thanked the countries for the increased funding, but says more is needed. Guterres yesterday visited Adjumani district in northern Uganda to see for himself how hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese refugees are living in the camps. Uganda President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni also praised donor countries for pledge of support to fund refugee activities.
You have really saved lives. These poor people of ours can die if they don't get this support. Yes, for us, we give them land, we give them space, but they need food, they need medicine, they need, in the short run, if they don't get it, they will definitely perish.
Uganda hosts more than 1 million refugees, including more than 800 South Sudanese who fled the country during the nearly four-year-long conflict. Guterres says additional funding is desperately needed for South Sudanese refugees. Guterres says the top priority is ending the conflict. South Sudan's Vice President James Wanyika told donors at the summit that despite the humanitarian and economic crisis his country faces, the country is committed to ending the conflict and will work with regional leaders to ensure that the country returns to normalcy. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinj in Kampala, Uganda.
The UN chief visited a refugee camp in Uganda yesterday where he appealed to the international community to match the same solidarity shown by Uganda in accepting millions of South Sudanese refugees.
What we all have seen is demonstration of the extraordinary generosity of the people and the government of Uganda, receiving so many hundreds of thousands, almost 1 million South Sudanese refugees as sisters and brothers and sharing with them their land and everything they have.
Guterres says Uganda's action deserves praise. He asked the international community to follow the example of Uganda.
Responding to our appeal for a massive financial support, both for humanitarian aid for the refugees, but also for the investments necessary for the educational system, the health system, the infrastructure, the environment of this area to be able to cope with this enormous challenge.
The UN top diplomat says without peace in South Sudan, the hundreds of thousands of internal displaced persons and refugees will not be able to return to their homes.
I cannot forget that 12 years ago I was here in June in this same place. And I was living a World Refugee Day with South Sudanese refugees that were singing with joy because they were going back home soon. And indeed, I was able a few years later to accompany many of them across the border, going back home, reuniting with their families, and hoping that their new country would be in peace. Unfortunately, the leaders of the country have not deserved the people they have, and the people is suffering enormously with this endless war.
Guterres reiterated, it is high time that South Sudan's leaders stop the war for the sake of their countrymen. A community leader in a camp hosting South Sudanese refugees in northern Uganda say they are worried about the number of teenage girls who are getting pregnant at the camp. The leaders say a lack of education facilities has forced many young girls to drop out of school, leaving them idle. Some unaccompanied minor girls claim young men offer them gifts in exchange for sex, resulting in unwanted pregnancies. Gift Friday reports for VOA from Kampala, Uganda.
15-year-old Mary fled Yei unaccompanied last year. She says when she arrived at the Bidibidi camp in northern Uganda, she had no one to turn to. Mary says she ended up living with teenage friends who also arrived at the camp without parents.
I did not have anyone to take care of me here. As you know, this life in the camp is very difficult. I was in senior one in Ye. When we came, there was no way to join school. Then I got pregnant.
Mary says she could not enroll in school because she had no money to buy textbooks and pens. She says she wound up having a relationship with a teenage boy who gave her gifts, including money. Mary says when she informed the boy she was pregnant, he fled the camp.
I am suffering with this pregnancy alone here. Because even the boy who had did that went back to Sudan. It has already happened. I only pray so that God help me to deliver safe.
Mary has since moved with a friend and a former classmate to the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Her friend is a registered Arma refugee, and so the two share the little support her friend receives from aid agencies. Mary says she believes many former classmates will drop out of school and end up as teenage mothers due to the difficulties they face in the refugee camp. She wants South Sudanese leaders to restore peace across the country so refugees can return home. 16-year-old Halima is in senior 2 at the only secondary school in Rhino Refugee Settlement in Uganda's West Nile region. Halima says with the help of her uncle, she's able to remain in school.
I stay with my uncle here in the camp who always advise and encourage me. But this life in the camp is not good for us girls. Many girls stay at home because they do not have people to support them. I know education is the key.
Halima says a lack of education causes many South Sudanese girls to fall victim to teenage pregnancies in the camps.
When girls are left to stay alone, it is always easy for the boys to deceive them with no parents, little education. It is easy for them to get pregnant.
Vivian Mamina's family fled to Uganda in 1994. Vivian is a youth leader in Rhino Camp. She says some teenage mothers in the camp are only 13 years old. Mamina says the parents of teenage girls who become pregnant rarely report who the perpetrators to the police. Mamina says most teenage girls at the camps who become pregnant are unaccompanied.
The major cause is because most of these youths, they came here without parents. They feel maybe if they get married, they can get support.
Mamina is calling on aid agencies to provide scholarships to teenage mothers and organize vocational training so that young parents learn work skills. Joseph Machek, head of the Refugee Welfare Council 1 in Achaya Camp, part of the Rhino Camp, says girls should be enrolled in nearby schools and not have to worry about tuition and other fees.
The main reason why this girl are getting pregnant very early like this is because of lack of education. Like imagine in Rhino Camp we are having only one secondary school for 32 villages. There's very far villages of which girls cannot even put from there after that secondary school. What they do after finishing P7 or PLE, so they drop out because of the distances.
Mayen Chan, who chairs the South Sudan Christian Agency, a South Sudanese civil society group operating in the camp, says his agency works to educate young people about how to live responsible, productive lives as refugees with varying degrees of success. Gift Friday for VOA News, Kampala.
A Kenyan court has ruled that presidential election results announced at the polling station level are final. As Muhammad Yusuf reports, some analysts say the ruling will reduce the electoral irregularities that took place in the past Kenyan elections.
After reading his judgment for more than 3 hours, the five-judge appellate court ruled that the election results announced at the constituency level were final, dismissing a complaint by the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission. William Ouko is one of the judges at the Court of Appeal.
The lowest voting unit and the first level of declaration of presidential election results is the polling station. The declaration form containing those results is a primary document, and all other forms subsequent to it are only tallies of the original and final results recorded at the polling station.
In April, the Kenyan High Court made a similar ruling, but the Electoral Commission asked the Appeals Court to overrule the judgment. In its argument, the Electoral Commission questioned the integrity of its officers in charge of polling station returns. Judge Ouko dismissed that argument, calling hypocritical for the commission to doubt its workers. Kenya's last two presidential elections were marred by disputes over the outcome. The 2007 dispute triggered intercommunal fighting that killed more than 1,000 people and displaced hundreds of thousands more from their homes. Felix Odhiambo, Kenya Country Director of the non-profit Electoral Law and Governance Institute in Africa, says Friday's ruling discouraged tampering with the election result.
It will cure the mischiefs that have been identified in the past, where the Electoral Commission unilaterally alters and changes the election results at the National Tallying Center. And most fundamentally, it gives credence to the finality and sanctity of the vote.
Ouko called on the Electoral Commission to hold a credible election in line with the country's constitution.
The responsibility of the appellant to deliver a credible and acceptable election in accordance with the constitution is so grave and so awesome and must approach and execute it with absolute fidelity, probity and integrity.
Kenya is scheduled to hold a general election on August 8th. President Uhuru Kenyatta is running for a second term against his challengers, who include former Prime Minister Raila Odinga. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
That report by Mohammed Yusuf from Nairobi brings us to the end of our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Gao by Magic System. I've been listening to Magic System with the song Gao. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Have a safe and restful weekend, and please join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.